Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Terry Puttis, Acting Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Forces, Transformation, and Resources. Also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Chuck Proh. Terry, the Defense Science Board recently released its summer study on 21st century strategic technology vectors. Could you elaborate on this study, and what are your views on some of the key recommendations outlined in the study, specifically on the board's new version of observe, orient, decide, act?
Over the last decades or so, we had been, you know, very, very successful in sort of creating some sort of vectors in terms of precision and stealth and a couple of others, which really, really served us well. But, you know, I mean, as we've been talking about, the world changes and the rate of change continues to grow. And so what are those things that we ought to really be looking at? My personal view is that there are a whole number of exciting technologies out there, which some people are calling, you know, revolutions in science. And in that category are things like robotics, nanotechnology, you know, bio, energy, information, and those are all really, really exciting. But historically, many times the big advances have come when two or three of those collide in a very clever way or intersect, and you are able to do things that you didn't imagine before. And so I think we always want to be looking at these sorts of things. And I'm glad that they did this, and I'm sure that's going to be very useful to the department to get their views. These are, you know, some very, very bright people who've got a lot of experience and are grounded in these sorts of things. But my view is that, you know, sometimes we also need to look at the intersections of these.
So do you have a perspective on what some of these new vectors should be, going back to precision, stealth, joint operations, and so on?
Well, these are personal views, okay? So, but I think that there are things that are going to be very interesting in the future, and perhaps some small investment might be very, very useful. You know, for example, I already mentioned sort of this notion of the cognitive sciences, okay? I mean, I believe there are many people believe that is real science now, okay? There were a lot of skeptics that wouldn't allow those into the scientific club, but I think that that's becoming less of a problem. I think that if we don't begin to look at things that affect logistics and sustainability, those sorts of technologies, that we're going to find ourselves out of balance. Okay, we have invested enormously in networking the force to allow the force to operate differently in this sort of this large dispersed way. And so what are the things that are inhibiting us getting the maximum return on investment out of that? And then I think that one of the things that, of course, is going to be extremely disruptive in the future are things in the category of directed energy. Anybody that follows that knows that that's a very interesting area and lots of work going on there. You know, you just have to look at the reports in the open press to know that there, I think, have been over 400 incidents of commercial laser kinds of things trying to dazzle airline pilots are being used by criminals and things like that. And so I think that's an area that's going to be interesting to follow.
Interesting. So again, it goes back to the novel ways of trying to drive behaviors, whether that's in a kinetic or a non-kinetic fashion.
Right. Exactly.
Great.
Terry, have the fundamental rules of combat, meaning mass, surprise, logistics, and unity of command, given way to the rules based on information and knowledge?
That's a very interesting question. I think that we're beginning to learn more about that. I mean, most people in uniform or that have been in uniform, you know, intuitively know that battles are won and lost in the minds of your opponent, okay? It doesn't necessarily have to do with, you know, with kinetic sort of stuff unless your strategy is attrition. And so what are those things then that affect the cognitive domain of your opponent? Okay, being surprised, being outmaneuvered, creating closely coupled events, you know, confronting someone with a situation for which they have no mental model. And so it is really about this notion of creating an information advantage and turning that into a competitive advantage. And so we have, I think, done a lot in that area. There's still a lot to understand. It's really interesting to talk to commanders who have been in command of large networked organizations and how they have admitted that they had to kind of think through their philosophy of command. All of a sudden, we have the ability for these chat rooms to pop up, you know, and the horizontal sharing of information at lower levels, which isn't necessarily the old command paradigm when things went up and down the chain. Now they can go across. And so I look for sort of manifestations of different behavior kinds of things to give me clues to that. What do commanders want to command now? You know, well, commanders now want to command bandwidth, you know, which is quite interesting, right? Used to be a back office function, moved to the front office because there's so much, you know, that's a source of power. And so I guess the rules or the goal hasn't necessarily changed, but I think the way we use information as a real source of advantage has become more appreciated, and people now are understanding how to use that.
Given your projections of future challenges to the nation's national security, what is the proper balance between conventional and special operations forces?
Yeah, well, I guess I couldn't give you an exact answer, but if I look at what happened, you know, most recently over the last several years, and you see how those two conventional and unconventional forces have been operating in concert in many ways, we've always talked about being able to be more soft-like. I mean, that's been sort of a term. You know, what does that really mean? Well, I mean, the ability to ease of employment and sustainment, having an appreciation for the local area that you're operating in. I mean, the Special Operations Forces spend a lot of time doing that sort of thing. I mean, I don't know what the right balance is, quite frankly. I mean, we have to make sure that we have enough sort of capability to deal with any potential high-end kind of thing. And at the moment, of course, we're doing very labor-intensive kinds of operations. And, I mean, there's been a lot of emphasis on language training and, you know, cultural awareness skills and those sorts. And those are all really, really good things. So I can tell you, though, that there are a lot of people engaged in this particular question. What exactly is the right balance? You know, are there synergies between the two, et cetera? And so I'm not trying to duck the question, but I don't have an exact answer for you.
Okay. Terry, I want to take us back to something that we talked about earlier around this notion of a return on investment. And certainly calculating the potential cost of a defense transformation is not a non-trivial matter. And skeptics have argued that the costs of transformation, both in the near term and the long term, are uncertain, and that transformation, therefore, might not necessarily be less expensive than, say, routine modernization. Could you elaborate on the efforts to really understand the costs associated with transformation within the military, and is it possible to reduce the defense budget and improve the department's ability to carry out its current and future missions simultaneously?
Let me answer it this way. I think that associating transformation to cost may not be the right metric, because it's really about making choices. Okay, some of the choices that you make have enormous payoff to be able to operate differently than you could before, but are relatively cheap in terms of the overall system. And of course, there are some legacy things that, you know, very hard choices have been made over. I mean, you remember the big debate about Crusader and Comanche and all those sorts of things. So it's not necessarily tied to more money. It's tied to the choices that you make. I'll give you a personal example here. You know, so I'm trying to make the decision on my internet connectivity in my house. So the decision was, do I buy this new computer, which was fairly expensive at the time, or do I invest in the high-speed internet? Okay, so I invested a modest amount in the high-speed internet, and the productivity in the household went up enormously. Okay, so it's not necessarily about buying some new high-end piece of stuff. It's how you use it is what really makes a difference. And so making specific choices and understanding the return on investment, I think, is the real key here.
So it sounds like people are drawing an equation that transformation is equal to cost reduction, and that's not really what this is about.
No, not necessarily. Transformation can allow you to do things more efficiently, okay? And that's what the question is about. You know, it's not about numbers. It's about capability. Okay, so, you know, a brigade combat team today can do significantly more than one could a decade ago. Okay, and You know, it's just like with airplanes. You know, we used to have 200 sorties per target, you know, in World War II, and now we have, you know, targets per sortie. And so, yeah, you can create some efficiencies and effectiveness as you go down this transformational journey.
Terry, I only have another minute left, but and we talked a little bit about this, so I'm curious. How are we using joint professional military education to transform the mindset and culture of the U.S. Joint Force community, including our allies and our industry partners?
Well, of course, we talked a little bit about the transformation chairs, and that's a good thing. But you know, one of the things that we also do is we sponsor what we call a transformation short course, which the National Defense University puts on for us. And of course, we invite everyone in the department, as well as the other agencies, as well as members from industry. It's pretty much open up to just about anyone, and to sort of help, you know, catalyze this transformational thinking. So that's been really successful. And most recently, over the last, I would say, half year, we also began a course on what we're calling stability and reconstruction. You know, there's been a great deal of dialogue about that kind of capability and what it really is, and how to think about that. And so education is a really powerful tool, I think, to get at this whole piece.
Great. What does the future hold for the DoD transformation efforts? We will ask Terry Pudis, Acting Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Forces Transformation and Resources, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.